In 1984, only a couple of months after checking himself into hospital, the striking redhead that is known to the world of sleep science as Silvano slipped into a coma and died, just as he had predicted. Welcome to this series of the podcast in which we will be listening to stories and interviews with experts about the world of sleep. In this first episode, we will follow the story of Silvano, a monumental figure in the world of sleep science who carried the condition fatal familial insomnia, and in the process, taught modern medicine the extreme case of what happens to a person when they do not get sleep. In episode 2, I talked to a specialist sleep physician on the strange cultural hang-ups we have about sleep, such as it being associated with weakness when in reality, it is one of the ultimate pillars to physical and mental well-being. We also discuss some of the research and methods behind a good night's sleep. And lastly, on episode 3, I talk with someone who specializes in the focused deployment of sleep in order to increase athletic efficiency and performance, showing us the true power of sleep. If you enjoyed what you listened to or have any feedback, or if you just want to say hello, please help out by visiting the Blunt Report on social media, giving a rating, or even telling a friend about what you listened to. The podcast is available on all platforms, including video podcasts on YouTube, or can be found at thebluntreport.com. Silvano, along with a known 40 families worldwide, had a ticking time bomb within his genes known as fatal familial insomnia that, before medicine had any grasp on it, Silvano knew would be his undoing. "I'll stop sleeping and within 8 or 9 months I'll be dead," Silvano once said to one of his doctors. Unsure of the absolute certainty of this, the doctor, Pietro Cortelli, then witnessed Silvano draw out his own genealogical tree stemming from the 18th century, indicating which of the individuals on these branches had been taken away by the same ailment. As it turns out, Silvano is linked to a so-called patient zero of fatal familial insomnia. A Venetian doctor died of what was considered an organic defect of the heart's sac. Before death, records state that he underwent paralysis, stupor, and was bedridden. A family member named Giuseppe, possibly the nephew of this Venetian man, but it's not quite clear, was also carrying this genetic affliction. Whether this fate was known or not to Giuseppe, we'll never know. However, the genetic hand was dealt, and around 1828, Giuseppe's teenage son died a number of months after falling ill. Shortly after, Giuseppe himself succumbed to a similar illness and died. To make matters worse, this familial connection was not fully understood until years later, as there is no definite time that this genetic issue arises, and the symptoms can differ with age, showing up more as a mental illness in younger years and not insomnia. Regardless, from this, the die was cast. This mutation began to spread. Silvano's ancestors had similarly awful experiences at the time that this genetic disease kicked in, including his father, Pietro. One of Pietro's daughters wrote a particularly poignant and harrowing insight into the world of fatal insomnia as she wept and wrote a letter to her sister Tosca discussing the condition of their father. She wrote, quote, "Papa is considerably worse than a month ago. He's lost his mind. He barely speaks, and when he does, he doesn't know what he's saying. When he sleeps, it's even worse. He makes these little movements because his nerves are never calm. He smokes, he turns on the lights, he throws off his covers, he rubs his hands and says he has pins and needles, all this while asleep, and when he wakes up, he is more tired than ever." On June 19, 1944, Pietro died, mumbling, thrashing, rubbing his body in the sheets, just before the age of 50. Again and again, this disease tore its way through the familial line. A daughter of Pietro died completely delirious, immensely tired, and choking on her own saliva when she became unable to swallow. Pietro's sister died in 1952, his niece in 1957, and other young relatives diagnosed with varying mental illnesses passed away by the work of their genes. The case of Silvano is something of a defining moment within the community of those that study sleep illnesses. Silvano's niece had married a doctor named Ignacio who had successfully convinced Silvano to visit a sleep clinic at the University of Bologna just as he had begun to undergo symptoms. While it was impossible to save any of the family members from this illness at that time, they found the minute, almost insignificant cause of all this sorrow, an ugly little protein in the brain known as a prion, developed by a genetic mutation. It is unknown why this prion particularly causes havoc during middle age. Regardless, its physical effects were abundantly clear inside Silvano. Research into other prion-related illnesses at that time, such as Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease and mad cow, shed light on the destructive effect these prions can have on the brain. After Silvano provided his brain for research after death, it showed that his thalamus, the area responsible for regulation of consciousness and sensory signals, was riddled with holes, despite the rest of his brain being healthy. In order for us to sleep, a number of physiological changes are required. A drop in body temperature, alterations to both cardiovascular and respiratory activity, including our blood pressure, as well as a buildup of melatonin. In patients like Silvano, their bodies can never fully prepare for a night's sleep. For Silvano, things like his heart rate and body temperature were uncharacteristically high when trying to sleep, and as a result, he experienced the characteristic sweats, pin-like pupils, pins and needles, and erratic movements that sufferers of fatal insomnia have to face. The body never prepares for rest. And perhaps most damning of Silvano's physical inability to sleep was the activity of his brain. It is somewhat of a myth that our brains are almost switched off during times of sleep. Quite the contrary, sleep is characterized by multiple differing stages of sleep, with some of those stages producing both energetic and more chaotic brain activity than when we are awake and going about a difficult day. When measuring Silvano's brain scan, however, the brain waves oscillated in steep, turbulent lines, not corresponding to what is expected of any stage of sleep or even wakefulness. Silvano was neither resting nor alert. He wasn't receiving the healing embrace of sleep, nor was he functioning as an awake individual. His world was half asleep, half awake. Attempts to medicate or sedate Silvano were fruitless. Periods of small, fragile sleep could be achieved, but the sleep achieved by medication is not real sleep. The result of sleep medication like benzodiazepines is closer to a loss of consciousness than it is real sleep, and does not allow the brain to undergo its rich tapestry of brain activity that is required for a fully functioning person. This is an issue that occurs in modern medicine today, in which patients are over-sedated and seem to sleep for long periods, yet are entirely underslept. For Silvano, the situation was no different, and the sedation only worsened his condition, making him drift perilously close to a coma. During Silvano's time in hospital, he had periods of lucidity, in which he would laugh and feel determined to help find a solution to his family's illness, to periods of extreme suffering, howling in the middle of the night with his arms and legs wrapped up, fighting off the strange sensations coursing through his body. He died in 1984. Out of the many, many revelations that Silvano's presence in hospital provided the world of sleep science, perhaps the most pertinent is the fact that sleep, as it turns out, is entirely non-negotiable. Sleep is necessary. In fact, apart from a few very basic living things with no brain, or a very simple one, all living things undergo some version of sleep, even trees. Considering the great evolutionary disadvantage that sleep is, leaving animals vulnerable to predation, for example, it is undoubtedly a function and a requisite for life. Sleep affects just about everything of physiological necessity within a human, and this complexity only compounds the difficulty of understanding sleep. In reality, it is not even clear how or why a person dies with a lack of sleep, nor how long we can go without sleep. On the extreme scale, a study in rats showed that they could only survive 11 to 32 days with total sleep deprivation. These rats developed lesions on their tails and paws, weight loss regardless of food intake, and developed the inability to thermoregulate their body. However, the study suggests that even a lack of sleep on a smaller scale is extremely detrimental. 17 to 19 hours straight with no sleep, a feat common among healthcare workers and truck drivers, have the same reaction time as someone considered legally drunk at a blood alcohol level of 0.05%. A lack of sleep is a marker for all major types of mortality, with a person getting less than 6 hours a night being 12% more likely to die early than someone who gets 8 hours consistently, as well as doubling your risk of cardiovascular disease. This can be seen from the largest sleep experiment ever conducted, that we know worldwide as daylight savings. In the US, when everybody loses an hour due to daylight savings, the interruption to our sleep cycles brings a spike in heart attack admissions to hospital of a massive 24%, while the corresponding extra hour we gain when the clocks change again later in the year, heart attack visits drop by 21%. Insomnia sufferers are also 17 times more likely to develop clinical anxiety and twice as likely to develop depression than normal sleepers. Undersleepers are more likely to gain weight, die in an accident, have decreased ethical decisions, an inability to retain memories, and a lack of sleep is a well-known marker for dementia. Regardless, Silvano's family is a special case, and none of these stats are of any use to those members who are carrying the deadly mutation in their genes. This condition has had various directions of research and even clinical trials. The biggest hope for the family was a trial for the simple antibiotic used to treat things such as acne called doxycycline. In Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, usage of doxycycline stopped prions, the sticky cores of facial insomnia, from clumping together in a sufferer's brain and even encouraged the brain's enzymes that assisted the cleanup process. This treatment is not without its controversy, however. Some scientists suggest that such an extended period of treatment would likely bring a whole swathe of new issues while barely assisting the prognosis of the fatal insomnia itself. Not only that, subjects would need to be tested for the presence of the mutation, revealing who has the illness and who doesn't. This part particularly has been a sticking point for the family and an ethical conundrum for the doctors looking inwards. In 1993, Gambetti, a scientist who ran a neuropathology lab at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, developed a test for the mutation that causes fatal familial insomnia. 50 members of Silvano's extended family went to Bologna to have their blood drawn and to be tested for this genetic mutation. But from there, both the Bologna clinic and the family decided to keep the results of these tests secret. Further clinical trials with doxycycline would likely break this pact. As of now, members of this family are continuing their lives, becoming parents and extending Silvano's genealogical tree. For an illness that affects the sufferers mostly around 50 years old and has a 50-50 chance of being passed on to a child, for now at least, the family has decided that a normal existence, grasping at the happiness while it is there, is better than one watching the clock, counting down the days to the age that sleeplessness could take hold. If you enjoyed what you listened to or have any feedback, or if you just want to say hello, please help out by visiting The Blunt Report on social media, giving a rating, or even telling a friend about what you listened to. The podcast is available on all platforms, including video podcasts on YouTube, or can be found at thebluntreport.com.